Okay, we'll next hear argument in appeal number 21-2169, Microtechnologies LLC versus United States Attorney General. Mr. Prince, please begin whenever you're ready.
Good morning, may it please the court. My name is Zachary Prince. I'm here today on behalf of the appellant, Microtechnologies LLC, also referred to as Microtech. This case is relatively straightforward. Microtech was required by its contract with the government to purchase a name brand software solution, as well as the maintenance to support that solution in year batches. This is no different than if Microtechnologies had been obligated to purchase any other commercial software, like an Apple product with AppleCare subscription. It comes at standard commercial terms that Microtech was required to abide by. The maintenance was sold in year packages or greater only.
Can I ask you, I'm going to jump right in and ask you a question about FAR 52.21241. So I believe that in your reply brief, you make it clear that you're not relying on a percentage of contract price reflecting the percentage of work performed prior to the notice of termination.
That's right, Your Honor.
Instead, you're relying only on reasonable charges the contractor can demonstrate to the satisfaction of the government that have resulted from the termination?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. What is your basis for saying that the payment made a year prior is resulted from the termination?
Well, Your Honor, at the time the contract was terminated, this was a cost required for performance of the contract. And the government makes much of the fact that we weren't actually required to provide maintenance in the brief period between the government's extension of the performance period and termination. But we can easily envision a scenario in which one of the U.S. Attorney's Office had an emergency filing on a Sunday evening, and they realized that their software was down. They would have called, they would have found that they don't have a maintenance package, and they probably would not have taken kindly to Microtech saying, we're sorry, we still need time to buy the maintenance here.
I'm having a little bit of a problem with the causation, just from a practical point of resulting from the termination, because that payment was made as a, business judgment to go ahead and make the payment with the understanding that it's less expensive, therefore the bid would be less expensive, more likely to get the contract then. And so I'm having a hard time with the causation part of have resulted from the termination.
Understood, Your Honor. This clause should be understood in the context of this court's longstanding interpretation of the termination for convenience principle, going back decades and decades now. It's a unique right of the government. The government can get out of its contract rights at any time for any reason, but in exchange, it promises the contractor that it will be made whole. The way that this clause implements that understanding, which is also codified in the regulations at FAR 49201A, is by providing two bases for the contract to recover. The first is the basis we are not seeking a straightforward application of the percentage of the contract value commensurate with the percentage of work performed. In many situations, this amongst them, that will not make the contractor whole. So the second prong of this analysis requires the contractor to be made whole also for reasonable charges established in the books and records of the contractor resulting from the termination. Here, this is a charge that the contractor would have recovered from the government, but for the termination. The FAR Council considered language that would have used the words direct cost resulting from the termination, and in the final version of this clause, they instead adopted reasonable charges, which in our view must be interpreted in light of the greater purpose of termination for convenient settlements and FAR 49201.
Do you think in a case that isn't a grant of summary judgment, this normally would be decided as a matter of fact or as a matter of law?
I think there are mixed questions of fact and law here. The interpretation of this FAR clause is a matter of law. Whether we satisfy the prongs of the analysis, the reasonableness of the charges, whether we could have avoided the charges, those were questions of fact that should have been decided appropriately in a hearing.
You're saying they should have been assumed or weighed in your favor.
I'm saying to the extent that The only evidence in the record, which is submitted by us, doesn't satisfy the factual burden here. The board erred by not proceeding to a hearing on those facts and conducting an evidentiary hearing.
Unless it wouldn't matter. There's a scenario where the facts, even when weighed in your favor, would still, if that could still result in summary judgment against you as a matter of law, then that would be fine, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay.
But in our view, and we believe this is the reason that every one of the boards and the courts that have considered this issue have interpreted that second prong of FAR 52.212-4L as inclusive also of preparation costs, is because of the regulatory context. And we take instruction from the ASPCA and the SWR decision, the District of Maryland on an appeal and an admiralty decision.
That's the question, though, is the reference point for how to determine what are fair, reasonable preparation costs in this case. And if we look at the proper reference point as being the time that modification 2 was entered into, then I think that's why the claims court concluded, the BCA concluded that there just were no preparation costs, because in that 12-hour period where modification 2 was alive, you did not undertake any costs going towards the agreed-upon task of executing on option year 1. And so I think as a legal matter, that's the challenge you have. Why is that the wrong way to think about it?
Well, Judge Chen, the moment that contract modification was issued and became legally effective, Microtech was required to have available the maintenance services. If it had waited until after the modification was issued, there was a possibility that there would be a gap in services to the government. And Microtech may have been in a position where it would have breached its contract. Adopting this bright-line rule would result in penalizing prudent contractors that are preparing for performance and incentivizing contractors to wait until the very last moment engaging in brinksmanship to see how long they can wait before incurring a necessary performance cost.
So what if instead of being a base year, the contract was for 20 years, and then there was option year 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, et cetera. And then you had bought up all of the software maintenance services for 25 years instead of 20 years on day one of this 20-year contract with 5 separate option years after that. Would you say that, assuming everything else was the same with the facts that happened here, you should be able to collect on the fees you paid up front 20 years ago for option year 21?
Not unless option year 1 were exercised. And that's why we draw the line here between...
Right, it was exercised for 12 hours. And so obviously there was nothing, again, just like in the facts of your case, that the contractor would have or even conceivably could have done in terms of undertaking any preparation costs for providing services in year 21. It would still, in your view, be reasonable for the contractor 20 years ago to have made the bet that it did to prepay for all of the services for 25 years?
It may have been reasonable for it to have made the bet to lock in for 25 years, but only that 21st year and the prior years would have been compensable, because only those costs were required for performance. Here, the contractor could have, had it not locked itself into a maintenance cost in advance, gone out and secured that cost. It may have taken time, and it ran the risk that the government would have required services that we would have been unable to provide.
Would your argument be the same on the facts that are before us if the Justice Department, 5 minutes after, you know, still on Sunday night, September, 30th, I assume, 2018, came back to you and reneged on the execution of Modification 2 and said we were hereby terminating?
Yes, Your Honor. We would have the same...
So the 5 minutes would still be enough, in your view, to assert that you've incurred reasonable costs.
Yes, Your Honor.
So let me ask you to pick up on that, if I could, to even make it a more interesting hypothetical. The Justice Department representative and the contracting officer, the contracting officer and the Microtech representative are seated across a table. The contracting officer says, okay, here's Mod 2, and hands it over. 10 seconds after that, the contracting officer's cell phone goes off. He gets a text message, and it says, mistake, we're not supposed to enter into this. And at that point, within a minute, the contracting officer says, this is a mistake, here's a retraction, a termination. Would you still be making this argument?
We would still be making
it. It's getting to the point where you're making a good argument for your client, but it seems to be getting to a point where it leaves kind of a bad taste in one's mouth. Do you know what I mean?
I understand, Your Honor.
There's just something about it.
What about the contracting officer actually left a voicemail on that Friday preceding the Sunday saying that that they didn't want to exercise Mod 2?
Your Honor, that was the contracting officer's representative who didn't have the warrant to bind the government in this case. And there's no evidence in the record that Microtech actually heard that message. And even if we had heard it, as far as we knew, the government had changed its mind and decided to exercise it. But the person who actually had the authority to bind the government issued that modification to us, and that's what
there were two people, right? That was the contracting officer's supervisor, I think?
Right. There was another warranted contracting officer here, but they both had authority to bind the government, as opposed to the contracting officer's representative who did not.
Mr. Prince, what about the situation I gave where it's literally less than a minute?
Judge Schall, just to...
But under your theory, the government would be stuck, right?
The government would be stuck, but conversely, if Microtech had received the text right after accepting the agreement, saying, don't accept it, we can't provide the services, it would have been in a position where it couldn't get out of the contract. It's only the government's unique termination for convenience mechanism that lets it correct these errors.
Under the contract, wasn't the government required to give you 60 days notice ahead of the expiration of the base year to exercise option year one?
They were, Your Honor.
Even if we just play along and assume that modification two was actually a legal valid document, I would think the government would not be able to have a legitimate case to say that there was something wrong with your side if on that following Monday, October 1, 2018, you weren't able to instantly provide the kind of software services that they were seeking, given that you had just entered into Mod 2 the night before.
I think in this case, they would have, Your Honor, because we don't believe this was necessarily a validly exercised option. This was a bilateral agreement to extend performance, separate from the option clauses of FAR 52.
So it's its own separate contract.
Separate contract incorporated by reference is the terms and conditions of the initial contract. That's why it required bilateral acceptance before it became effective.
So then, again, why is it a reasonable cost incurred a full year beforehand for these services when we have just decided that this was a separately, generated and distinct contract?
It became a necessary cost for performance at the time Modification 2 was effective. It was a preparation cost in advance. And at that point, had the government not extended performance, it would have been a sunk cost, just like the cost for the subsequent period of performance.
I guess what I'm wondering is it fair to say that it was reasonably foreseeable back in 2017 that you would have this separate bilateral agreement a year later, such that you would want to and need to prepay and buy all these services ahead of time?
In 2017, we took a business risk, believing that the government likely would extend performance for these two additional performance periods. Whether they did that through a technical option mechanism or they did it through a separate agreement was of no moment to our assessment of whether the government would need these services. If the government hadn't extended performance, we would acknowledge that we are not entitled to these costs.
Mr. Prince, let me ask you this, and then this, no one was at fault here. The contracting officer's representative called over Friday afternoon and said, we're not going to exercise it. And that did not get listened to until Monday. And that's nobody's to be criticized, that happens. But assume for the moment that the microtechnology representative had heard that phone call, and then everything else had played out the way it did. She received later a government modification number 2, and then 12 hours later, the next Monday morning, it's retracted. Would the facts be any different because of the fact that the person had heard the phone call on Friday?
Your Honor, the facts wouldn't be different, but
The facts would be different, but would the result be different? I'm sorry.
It may have given the government a better basis to argue a unilateral mistake, an argument it has not pressed, as far as we can tell, in this appeal, because then it would have established, perhaps, that Microtech shared the government's understanding of an erroneous fact. But we would have a legal basis to believe that the warranted contracting officer who issued the modification, who had the authority to issue the modification, was representing that the government had changed its mind.
The relevant FAR provision also says the contractor should not be paid for any work performed or crossing curb, which reasonably could have been avoided. Did anybody argue that below, or to your knowledge?
They did, Your Honor, and in our view, reasonably could have been avoided is referring to a duty to mitigate after the termination. This cost couldn't have been reasonably avoided for us after the modification was issued because it was necessary for performance.
But that's not an issue on appeal, right?
I believe it is, but we would be glad to say it is not because I believe it would be the government's issue.
Right. Okay. You've used up all your rebuttal, but we'll give you 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
Let's hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The Board's decision below should be affirmed. As this Court's hypotheticals point out, the Court should not indulge the appellant's attempt to capitalize here on the agency's mistaken issuance of Modification 2. The cost sought in this appeal simply cannot be an unavoidable, reasonable charge resulting from the termination, as would be compensable under Prong 2 of the applicable clause at issue. The costs...
What if, sorry to interrupt here, but what if Microtechnologies had entered into some agreement with NWICS, if that's the correct pronunciation, in that 12-hour window?
Your Honor, if the contractor had entered into an agreement with the manufacturer for the software during that 12-hour window, they would have a much better case for attempting to be compensated.
Wouldn't they have a winning case?
They may have a winning case if they were able to establish that the cost could not have been avoided, because as Judge Stoll pointed out, there is a specific limitation on cost awardable under the clause, and those being those that are reasonably avoidable cannot be compensated. So the contractor would have needed to show that, you know, entering into the contract with the manufacturer during those 12 hours could not have been avoided reasonably. That would have been a prerequisite showing to make that compensation theory work for them. In this case, the costs sought were incurred at the beginning of the base year, as the Court pointed out. They were for the first option year, not knowing whether or not that option year would be exercised. And that modification, too, was then in effect for 12 hours. Does not change the character of that avoidable cost into a compensable one.
So you would agree, Mr. Byrd, that even that if some work had been done during that 12-hour period, that under the clause, the termination for convenience clause that we've been discussing, they would be entitled to recover for that, even if it was quite minimal.
Under the first prong of the clause, Your Honor, if they had performed work under the agreement, under Modification 2, then yes, they would have been entitled to a percentage of work performed, percentage of contract value representing percentage of work performed.
What if that Thursday preceding the Sunday, they had thought, hey, we think the government's going to go ahead and exercise this. We better go ahead and purchase the maintenance contract or purchase the maintenance license. What if they would have done it then? Could that have been a reasonable cost incurred?
Well, Your Honor, as Judge Chin pointed out earlier, there was a 60-day notice requirement under the contract to exercise options. That notice had not been given to the contractor. Therefore, neither the 60-day nor the 30-day notice had been given to the contractor as required by the clause, the dash 9 clause in the contract, therefore incurring the costs for the software a few days before the agency entered into modification to or executed modification to erroneously would not have meant that the contractors would not have helped the contractor any in this case. It would still be a reasonably avoidable charge that is not a reasonable charge resulting from the termination.
Given that the requirements for exercising an option were not actually fulfilled here, do you view modification two as like a separate and distinct contract from the contract that was entered into in 2017? Or do you think it was, or does the government view it as a proper exercise of option year one?
Your Honor, given that the base period had expired under the original award, the original agreement, the base year had expired, that, as we explained in footnote 7 of our brief, meant that the option, the ability to exercise the option in that base year, that original award, expired with it. And therefore, entering into modification 2 meant that the agency and the contractor entered into a new agreement. And as Mr. Prince agreed on that point, therefore, that calls into question further the reasonableness of having incurred these costs a year before entering into this new agreement, because you have now a whole separate agreement being entered into on September the 30th, 2018, as opposed to a modification. As we also explained in our footnote 7 of our briefing, and the board's silence on the issue also lends credence to, it doesn't really matter whether it's a modification exercising an option or a modification entering into a new agreement, because it still is the case that the charge incurred here by the contractor was not a reasonable charge resulting from the termination of that modification too. The timing and the purpose for which the contractor entered into that, incurred that cost, simply under no reasonable reading of the clause at issue, could be compensable. And if there are no further questions, I can conclude.
Microtech was contractually obligated to provide those services immediately upon execution of modification two. Is that fair to say?
No, Your Honor. The contractor before the board failed to establish that they had an immediate obligation to provide the services.
What other way of understanding modification two would there be?
Your Honor, in the context of the case that we have, there was this modification two was entered into at approximately 9 o'clock on a Sunday night. And there was nothing offered from the contractor that they performed any work under the agreement immediately after.
Maybe the point is, assuming for now that modification two was a separate, distinct contract, independent of the 2017 contract, there just weren't enough terms and conditions in terms of timing of performance because it was such a skeletal agreement.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, this was a new agreement, and the parties have not delineated what the terms of that separate agreement would be.
But the government's view, we could, if we, based on the way the decision was written by the board, even though it said some things about refundable, non-refundable, and the question of whether the obligations were triggered immediately and other things, this court wouldn't have to reach those kinds of issues because it could just affirm based on a legal interpretation of the FAR and how it applies to the undisputed facts here.
That's correct.
Not the disputed facts.
That's correct.
I have one more question. In your brief, you refer multiple times to substantial evidence, that there's substantial evidence supporting the judge's fact findings. Why is that something I would think about on summary judgment?
And, Your Honor, I have to admit that was an artful drafting on my part. As the court is aware, it is a de novo standard of review here, and the question for this court is whether there is a factual dispute as to a material fact that would either preclude summary judgment for the appellant or mean that summary judgment was appropriate for the government.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Prince, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. The language of Modification 2, in our view, does not brook more than one interpretation. It has, in the appendix on page 190, you see the list of the supplies and requirements here. It requires...
Sorry, what page is that, Mr.?
190.
Of the joint appendix?
Yes, sir. Okay. It requires annual software maintenance. The modification has an effective date of 9/29/2018. In fact, the day before the modification became legally effective. We understood, and we believe that the government shared this understanding at the time, that this had an immediate effect. This required Microtech to be available to provide the software maintenance. We do not believe that the government would have taken kindly to our response in the event that the government did need this maintenance in the short period of time at issue, say that, sorry, it's unavailable. We can envision a scenario where a U.S. Attorney's Office has an emergency filing. They need a litigation document that is stored in this NUIC software. They couldn't get it, and they're harmed as a result. I know that I am no stranger to having technology issues prevent me from getting urgent filing deadlines. I know the stress that that has caused, and I know the sympathy that I get from the courts in which I am filing as a result. That's why they contracted for this service. Microtech isn't getting a windfall.
Is it your position that if there is an obligation that resolves the legal issue of whether there are reasonable charges that were the result of the termination, that's just one fact to consider, right?
It's our position that that resolves one part of the legal issue, because our interpretation of FAR 52.212.4 is that it must be considered in light of FAR 49.201, which cautions that in termination for convenient settlement, the contractor is to be made whole, including for the cost that it reasonably incurred in preparation for performance of the terminated work. That gives the context for termination for convenient settlements and this separate FAR clause as well. So in that context, we would posit that given that Microtech was required to provide the NUIC software maintenance, it had to have that ready and available. The only way it could do that was ordering it in advance. Whether that was a moment in advance or a year in advance, it was required to have that available. And the record does show that by having it available a year in advance, we were able to secure for the government substantially reduced pricing. The list price for the software maintenance per unit was $6,500. We brought it down to $3,700 for the option period because we ordered it in advance. The rule that the government advocates for here would have an unreasonable effect, likely causing the government to incur substantially increased costs from contractors who can't lock in costs until after the performance period begins. Your Honor, I see I'm over my time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The case is submitted.